just wanna ride on my motorcycle. And I don't wanna tickle, 'cause I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't wanna die, just wanna ride on my motorcycle. Late last night, the other day, I thought I'd go up and see Ray. So I went up and I saw Ray, and there was only one thing Ray could say was, I don't want a pickle, I just want to ride on the motorcycle. And I don't want to die, just want to ride on my motorcycle. Late last week I was on my bike, running to a friend named Mike. Running to a friend named Mike. Mike no longer has a bike, he cries, I don't want a pickle, I just want to ride on my motorcycle. Yeah, and I don't want a tickle, 'cause I'd rather ride on my motorcycle. And I don't want to die, just want to ride on my motorcycle.
Hello and welcome to the IAM, Institute of Advanced Motorists, 4-weekly half hour. You're listening to Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM. I'm Paul Neese, the host for this show. IAM, or the Institute of Advanced Motorists, is a registered charity and is run by volunteers. Nobody gets paid, everyone gives their time to do work for IAM. We do have a national council that is a governance body that runs the show over the whole country, but we operate as 5 separate regions in New Zealand, and Wellington is one of them. And the Wellington area includes Kapiti, Horowhenua, Wairarapa, Manawatu, and of course Wellington itself, so it's quite a big area that we cover. The aim of the Institute of Advanced Motorists is to make good drivers better, and we do that by teaching people advanced driving and riding skills. And we work with people in cars and in motorcycles. Today we're focusing on motorcycles. We're going to have a chat with local person Martin Rushton, who is what we call a motorcycle associate. He has joined IAM, the Institute of Advanced Motorists, and he is going through the process of becoming an advanced rider. So I thought it would be quite good to chat to him to find out what his experience with IAM has been so far and what he thinks of us. So, welcome, Martin. It's great to have you here today.
Kia ora, Paul. Thanks for inviting me along.
Not a problem. We always like to have chats to people, especially when it is relating to motorcycles. So, first question, what do you ride?
So at the moment I ride a T120 Bonneville. It's 5 years old and it appeals to me because it looks like one of the bikes I had some very early experiences on many years ago back in the UK.
That's right. In those days they used to leak oil like mad, didn't they?
Yes, they did in those days. These days, not so much.
No, exactly. So what sort of CC rating is that bike?
So that's a 1200, which right. The original one was only a 650. That often catches a few people out when they look at it. They don't realise how big the engine is.
No, because I've seen it. It actually looks quite a small bike and you think, oh, 1200 in there?
Yeah, and it's oil-cooled, not air-cooled like the original.
Right, yeah, all the mod cons.
That's the one.
So how In total, how long have you been riding motorcycles, Martin?
So probably 54 years since my first experience on two wheels, which was before I was legally allowed to ride on the roads in the UK.
Okay.
My best friend and I managed to acquire an old scooter, which we miraculously got going against all the odds, and cavorted around the local fields where we lived in the north of England. And but when we all turned 16, the thing to do in the UK was to get a motorcycle. You were allowed to get up to a 250cc bike.
Right.
And it was your first taste of freedom. The thing was, there was no training. You just bought the bike and threw your leg over it and off you went. And usually with your friends, you were trying to go as fast as possible and be first anywhere you were going.
Absolutely. And we all thought we were bulletproof in those days anyway, didn't we?
Well, you are at in your teenage years, are you not?
Well, that's why people think. So, so you've had your license for a long time. You've ridden for a long time. Now, since training has been available, have you taken advantage of any motorcycle training?
I'm probably embarrassed to say not really. I've just relied on the fact that I've got to my late 60s without too much of many mishaps. Obviously, had a few tumbles, particularly in my teenage formative years.
Right.
Down to either poor machinery or probably more likely
rider
skill or thinking I'm more skilled than I am. And that's kind of what prompted me to look at the training now, because I am in my late 60s and I want to keep riding motorcycles as long as I possibly can. And recognising that if I can ride more safely, more correctly and more appropriately, that's going to help in that direction.
So that was the reason you joined IAM?
Well, that and the fact that you persuaded me to join IAM, Paul. But no, the real reason was it was to prolong my motorcycling career. I still feel I've got a few years left in me. Mm. And the more I can keep my safety paramount, the better. For my sins, I've had both my knees replaced, so I'm very, very aware that if I come off, I could be in a whole world of grief. And so if I can prevent that happening and ride more safely, more effectively, then that's got to be a good thing.
Okay, so that's about getting skills up to make sure that you are safe. Okay, Martin, before you started riding with IAM, what was your own assessment of your riding? How good a rider did you think you were?
I guess I thought I was a reasonably competent rider in that I'd been riding for the best part of 50 years and by and large survived with one or two scuffs and bumps and bruises on the way, particularly in the younger years. But I felt I was pretty competent. But there again, when I reflect back, I think, well, the bikes have changed, the technology's changed, the tyres, the brakes, but also the road conditions, the volume of traffic, the speed of traffic. So it was on that point that I thought that it wouldn't be a bad thing for me to think about further training or some training, should I say. I'm keen to prolong my motorcycling career as long as I possibly can, but will only do so when I can be confident I'm going to be as safe as I possibly can make myself. And you know, at the end of the day, the motorcycling in and of itself is not dangerous. It's the person holding the throttle.
That's right.
And that's the crucial factor, really. So the better I can make myself, the better it will be.
Okay, so when you did come out on your first rides with us, were you surprised at some of the things that came up?
Surprised that I wasn't doing as much as I thought I was doing in terms of being aware of what was around me and looking and watching for potential hazards, anticipating what might be further down the road. The biggest eye-opener, I guess, in the early days and even now is the road position. That is absolutely vital in making sure that when you're negotiating a series of bends, you've got the best visibility possible, but also people can see you as well. Mm. That's the other thing that I hadn't really picked up on. I mean, in my early days, it was always black leather and dark colours, which were not exactly conducive to being seen. Now, I wouldn't go out without wearing a fluorescent jacket, dipped headlights on all the time, making sure that if I'm out there, people can see me. Being very aware over the years that there's a lot of accidents involving motorcycles where even if the motorcycle is not to blame, they come off second best with a collision with other road vehicles. So if I can make myself visible, more visible, not only with what I wear but where I'm positioned on the road, the better that's got to be.
Okay, so in terms of position for, you know, getting through the bends, you talked about getting the best view. How does that affect your progress around corners now as opposed to before you joined us?
I think I'm much smoother now in my riding style. I noticed it in a recent observed ride that I had, Paul, where we went down a particular piece of road, and I've been down it a few times, not an awful lot, but fairly familiar with it. And I can remember the early days going down that road. It would be like I used to ride as a teenager, heavy on the brakes, heavy braking for corners. I think I touched the brakes about three times in about 10 kilometres, where I was probably 20 or more times in the previous rides, just because I was reading the road better, I was positioning myself better. It's, and the word smooth comes up in my thoughts more and more when I'm doing this training.
Sure, yeah, and it is about smoothness. The smoother you are, the better progress you make. And I'm talking about progress, not speed, because we ride within the law, but we still have fun doing so. And I find that once I learnt where to position myself in bends for the best view, I had never had any surprises with anything coming the other way. It felt like I had a lot of time. And I found myself, without realising it, going more quickly around corners than I did before. Did you have the same experience?
Absolutely. And what I have noticed when I'm out and about, whether I'm riding the bike or driving a car, when I look at motorcyclists, you can see those that adopt the roadcraft style of riding as opposed to those that don't. And many of the roads around here, you can watch some motorcyclists and you think, oh my goodness, it's an accident waiting to happen. But then you see others who are really competent and confident, and it's perhaps hard to put into words, but it's just that smoothness, that in control. It's the right position. You see them, and that's the benefit of having this drawn to your attention through the training. It's like some people, especially old people like myself, older people like myself, we can be a little bit nervous of criticism. After all, I've ridden bikes for 50 years. What can anybody tell me about riding bikes? If you can get rid of that thought and say, look, you know, whatever I do, as long as I'm learning something, this has got to be a good thing. That's how I found it. And approach it with an open mind and don't be frightened to ask questions. And equally, don't be put off by people questioning what you're doing and making you think a little bit more.
Because it's all about being a thinking rider. Yeah. Making decisions based on, you know, what you see and what you think about what you see. Okay, when you come out first with IAM, we do what we call an initial ride, and your initial ride was with me. So what about that ride made you decide to carry on? Because after an initial ride, of course, you can bail out and give up and say, no, I don't want to do this. What made you carry on?
I think, the first thing, I was relieved you didn't take the keys off me and say you shouldn't be riding a bike at all. But
I wouldn't have the power to do that.
No, so that was reassuring. But no, that seriously, I thought the feedback was constructive. You know, I took away the thoughts you gave me and reflected on them, and I thought, well, you know, that's right. It's not criticism for criticism's sake. You know, and I think everybody can learn, and will learn till the day they hang up the helmet. But for me, I thought, well, there's something I can work on here. And I have to say, I've got great support from my wife, who, when we first got married, all we had was a motorcycle, but she's long since stopped riding on the pillion when we started a family. But she knows I enjoy motorcycling, but she wants me to do it safely. Yeah. And so she's encouraging me to do this as well, which is great. It's been interesting. And I think having had to pick up the road code and, well, frankly, I'd never read it really. When I came to New Zealand, I was qualified motorcycle, or had a motorcycle license, and I had the car driving license from the UK, and the conversion test was not exactly that rigorous, shall we say. I don't mean to be critical of the system, but so picking up the road code and having to go through that and realise there are lots of similarities but some significant differences, and then the roadcraft manual as well makes you stop and think about what you're doing a little bit more. Having said that, it's not onerous. It's not university challenge or anything like that. It's all common sense stuff, and so I found that pretty useful too. And I suspect there's a lot of people out there on four wheels as well as two that have long since lost touch with some of this information.
Yeah, and of course, it's a good time to tell the listeners that people who drive cars can join IAM as well and go through similar processes of being observed and being given feedback about their driving. But back to motorcycles, that's what happens when you go out and ride with us. You have an observer, and I'm an observer, and we have a number of observers in the Wellington area who will give you feedback on your riding. They'll make suggestions in line with that roadcraft system that we've mentioned, and then you go out on your own, practice the things that have come up, and then go out again with the same observer or another observer. So how have you found that sort of approach to learning?
I think the first thing to say is that I'm very grateful to all the observers because, as you said in the intro, Paul, they give up their own time and they are volunteers. So observe rides are anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 hours, depending on what the agenda is for the day and what you're trying to work on. So I'm very grateful that there are people out there prepared to do that. It's just great to be out with somebody who's keen on motorcycling because you get the brief before you set off for the ride. You have a series of objectives you're looking to cover, be it road position or town riding or motorways or whatever it may be. And then you get the feedback afterwards, and it's a great chance to talk about bikes in general, but specifically your riding and where it's getting you to. And from the initial start, when I thought, oh dear, will I be able to take the criticism? Everybody can be a little bit sensitive when they think they know everything and they don't.
Sure.
But generally, it's been put across in a very constructive way, and it's been very logical. It's been very helpful, and I think it's the balance is pretty good. I've not had any bad experiences. I can't say that any observer rides I've not enjoyed. I've enjoyed them all. You do feel initially under a little bit of pressure. It's not somebody watching this over your shoulder, but
I was going to ask you about that.
Oh,
yes.
Right. Well, and initially it was a bit like, everything I do is going to be scrutinised to the nth degree. It's not at all like that. And eventually you don't really think about that. You think about what you're doing, which is, I suppose, what you should be doing.
And, absolutely.
I've picked up some interesting things. Even down to the setup of my bike, I was riding the bike and it was okay. It wasn't the sharpest handling bike I've ever had, but a couple of suggestions have had me tweak, get the suspension tweaked, and that's made a huge difference. I'm grateful for the input and the time that's been devoted to me in getting my motorcycling improving.
Have you found there are any barriers to making progress with your riding?
Not particularly. I'm in the fortunate position to be retired now, so I can pick and choose when I can go out. I enjoy riding in a group or with other people. It's whilst on the bike you're on your own in your own kind of bubble, if you like. It's nice to be out with somebody else and to analyse what you've ridden, where you've ridden, and other things that might be going on as well. So I've not felt any barriers at all. I found it overall a very positive experience.
And you get out often enough?
Probably not as much as I would like, but I have a lot of conflicting hobbies and interests, so I have to balance it off, and also obviously having family and grandkids that take up time. But I'm keen to explore other possibilities. At the moment, it's always been road riding for me. Bit of touring in the past, mainly when I lived in Scotland with my wife and family, but I'm keen to try a bit of off-road riding, so I'm trying to work on persuading my wife to allow me to have an off-road bike. Not getting great feedback at the moment, but
negotiations are ongoing.
Well, the thing is, if I can succeed in the IAM and acquire that, that would probably help. It wouldn't hinder anyway, that's for sure. And I know IAM's not off-road riding, but it just makes it clear that I am serious about being safe.
Okay. So how long has the process been for you so far, Martin?
I'm sure I'm atypical because I've had a few things that have probably slowed progress down, shall we say. Extensive overseas travel since COVID left us, and family weddings and major building work at home. But I've probably been going, I don't know, about 10 months now. I know others have done it quicker than that if they put the time in. And as I've said already, the observers are all volunteers. So And some of those guys are working, and it means that they can't be as flexible as I can with my time. Yeah, one thing I have noticed is that all the observers are male, and all the people doing the IAM course seem to be male that I've come across so far. So
we have do have some women associates.
All right.
We have two or three at the moment, I believe.
Good.
And there is one female lady observer who is very busy in her own life, so finds it difficult to get out. But we'd like more.
That's good to hear. Because it's something that I think you'd have to have some motorcycling experience to get the full benefit of it. You couldn't go straight in on your first bike and do it, I don't think. That would be my view. But having said that, to leave it till you've done 50 years on this in the saddle is probably not ideal in the other direction either.
Right. So the reason I asked about the length of time it's taken you so far is that I want to sort of come around to letting people know that there's no magic number of rides that they will do before they have a test and be assessed as an advanced motorcycle rider at all. It's just, to answer that question is how long is it going to take me? How long is a piece of string, basically?
And absolutely, it depends where the rider's coming from and what stage their riding capabilities are at. And I think it's good that the system encourages you, it gives you the positives, but it also gives the work-ons, and I feel in my own case I'm not far away now. I don't want to put myself forward, and I believe the system wouldn't let you go forward if the observers weren't convinced you were of that standard to take the test. So
absolutely, we do want people to succeed in the test rather than having to go and redo it.
But succeed on merit and if the bar's set fairly high, which I believe it is, then that's a good thing. That's a good thing, because at the end of the day, it is all about, it's the rider's safety, it's the safety of other road users. And I think for me too, and it's, I've not heard anybody else mention this, it's about the image of motorcycling. Back in the UK and back in the sort of mid-70s when I was first moving around on two wheels, motorcycling didn't have the greatest of images, shall we say. And to some extent, that still remains, I think. And if we can go and show that, okay, motorcycling is like a lot of things, playing rugby, I've done that in the past as well, that comes with a risk of injury. But if you do it properly, the chances are you're not going to come to grief.
Exactly. So in your time with IAM so far, just very quickly, what have been the three greatest learnings for you so far?
Oh gosh, I think there's more than three, but the three top that we've mentioned, road positioning already. So I've gone from, drifting towards the racing line. I can think of where I live and the road that I use to get onto the main road, and it's a completely different line now. It's quicker using the Roadcraft line, and that's almost counterintuitive. The second thing is, I think, being aware of what's going on around you, and particularly checking behind you. I've always been. It's probably a nervousness from my teenage years looking for police cars following me, but it's making sure you know what's behind you. So I think it's that observation and using that information as well. It's what you do with the information when you've got it. And I think it's also being aware of other road users needing to know you're there. So, there's been a few good examples of that. For example, making sure lorry drivers know that you're thereby, it can be helpful to move to the near side to let them see you from that side of the road. That's just three and probably not necessarily the most important ones. There's a whole panoply of things, including things like slower technical riding skills as well, which were not something I was very high up on. And I suspect there's a lot of people out there in the same boat.
Sure. And on that note, we're just about running out of time.
Oh, gosh.
It's funny how quickly a half hour goes, doesn't it, when we're having a good time talking about learning and learning how to ride. So if anyone out there is interested in this after listening to Martin's interview, if they'd like to find out more, you can go to our website, iamroadsmart.org.nz, and that'll give you some more information and tell you how to make an inquiry and get your first free of initial ride, and you don't have to pay anything before you have that ride. So it's a ride for nothing. What is there to lose? So thank you, Martin, for coming in today. I really appreciate you taking your time out to talk to me today, and all the best for the rest of your IAM journey and passing that advanced test. I look forward to hearing that you have in short course, I would say.
Thanks, Paul. It's been very enjoyable.
Right, and we'll go out with the Shangri-Las and Leader of the Pack. Ka kite anō, everybody.
Is she really going out with him?
Well, there she is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it must be great riding with him. Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him? Yes, we see.
That's when I fell for
the leader of the pack.
My folks were always putting him down. They said he came from the wrong side of town.
What you mean when you say that he came from the wrong side of town?
They told me he was bad.
Sort of smile and kissed me goodbye. The tears were beginning to show. As he drove away on that rainy night, I begged him to go slow. Whether he heard, I'll never know.
Look out! I felt so helpless, what could I do?
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.